Welcome to Keep Calm and Cook On. I'm your host, Julia Tertian. Today, you're listening to one part of a special 9-part series recorded during my virtual book tour celebrating my latest cookbook, Simply Julia. In this series, I get to switch seats and be the person answering the questions rather than asking them. If you enjoyed these conversations, please know that there are over 50 more episodes of Keep Calm and Cook On you might also really love. There's a link to all of the episodes in the show notes, plus a link to order a personalized copy of Simply Julia from Oblong Books, my local indie bookstore. And please don't forget to rate and review the show. It takes very little time and it goes a very long way to sharing these conversations. And before we dive in, a special thanks to Better Than Bouillon, which has made this season and many of my meals possible. Better Than Bouillon is a paste, a base, a flavor enhancer. It's a kitchen shortcut, a secret seasoning. I use it so much that I actually shouted it out in Simply Julia on my list of 5 things I always have on hand. To add more flavor to your meals, head to betterthanbouillon.com or just click on the link in the show notes. Today's episode features the conversation I had with Dori Greenspan on February 25th during a virtual event hosted by Oblong Books. Oblong Books has 2 locations, and they are the largest independent bookstores in the Hudson Valley. Oblong Books is also my local bookstore, and they have been so supportive of my work for so long, and I appreciate them so much. Dori Greenspan is the author of 13 cookbooks, including Everyday Dori and Dori's Cookies. A best-selling author and 5-time James Beard Award winner, she's a columnist for the New York Times Magazine. Dori's next book, Baking with Dori, will be published in October. You can find her at Dori Greenspan on Instagram and Twitter. Kicking off my virtual book tour with Dori was such a joy. We talked about home cooking, how we make our cookbooks, the volunteer work that my wife, Grace, and I do, and so much more. Also, in very small world news, we talked about how Dori and her husband, Michael, grew up going to my grandparents' bakery in Brooklyn. My mom was listening to this event and even got to weigh in on this moment. The voice you'll hear at the end of the episode belongs to Ellen from Oblong Books, who chimes in to ask the questions from the audience. I really hope you enjoy this conversation.
Your mother's here, Julia.
I know, I saw it. She...
Hi, Mom.
All right, my parents are particularly excited about this conversation, as am I, and I'm so grateful to be here with you.
I'm so glad to be here with you. But I think you've made a mistake. Oh, I also have to tell you, a friend of mine called this afternoon and said, do you think you could tell Julia how much I love her hair?
I washed it for you.
I told you, Meg loves your hair. But I was looking at, I know the book comes up backwards, but you don't. You look great no matter what. But I was thinking, it says, Simply Julia, 110 easy recipes for healthy comfort food. And then I think before your name, it should say, from a very generous home cook. This book is, I love it. I'm so excited about it because it's such a reflection of you. It's so inclusive. It's so generous. I feel like when I've read the book a couple of times, that you're inviting us to a very big table. You've managed to do something wonderful. You've made a cookbook with great recipes and you make us feel as we're reading it that we're your friends. Congratulations.
I'm really moved, and I don't know what to say. I can't tell you how much that means coming from you, because I've felt very similarly with your work, and I feel like you also really know what goes into making something like the books both you and I have made. So it just means a lot, and I'm also just so happy to know that my parents are attending, because my mom has been telling me for years, like, you should use One Big Table as a title for something, but Molly O'Neill, the late great Molly O'Neill, used it. and she likes to talk about how warm and welcoming it is. So I am just picturing my mom on the other side of her computer being very happy about what you just said. And that just makes me feel very connected and I appreciate it. So thank you.
Because that is the feeling. And it's, I think that's my husband's laundry alarm. Michael? Oh, it's his bread alarm. He's baking bread. Okay.
Oh, famously. What kind?
Michael's bread. He thought he was baking 6 baguettes, but he added too much water. He's going to be baking 12 tomorrow. It happens.
What time should we come over?
Usually by noon, they're out. So come on. I want to talk about home cooking because you are truly a home cook. And I was thinking, I have to ask you, were you named after Julia Child?
Not that I'm aware of. I'm named after my grandfather, my mom's father, Julius. But as a kid, because I loved cooking so much since I was so young, my sort of family nickname was Julia the Child. And again, wonderful and surreal to talk to you about this topic, which you know so intimately.
Well, so as I was reading the book, and you know, and I have your others, I cooked from your others, I was thinking you could have been named after Julia, but how much, I had an experience with Julia. We were out for the day, rare. So when I was working with her in Cambridge, I lived there for 2 months. One day she said, let's play hooky. Her idea of fun was to go to the supermarket. So we went. That was hooky for Julia Child. And she said to me, just out of the clear blue sky, she said, you know, we make such a good team. She said, because we're just a couple of home bakers. And I thought I could imagine her putting her arm around you and saying, we make such a good team because you are such a home cook. Were you trained? You weren't, were you?
No. And I'm just having trouble getting past conjuring this image of getting to stand with her and having her arm around me and say that. Yeah. And I would prefer if maybe you were right in between us. I think that would just be great. But my training was public television. My training was Julia Child. And my training was being surrounded by cookbooks and magazines. And my training was my just lifelong curiosity. So I have cooked at home since before I can remember, since I was, you know, a really, really young kid. And the only sort of professional cooking, I guess I've done, like I've never worked in restaurants. I did start a catering company when I was in high school. I took a week-long catering course for like a continuing education thing. And I walked in, you know, I was the youngest by many decades, and I walked in and the instructor said, if you love to make lists and people in your life give you a hard time about it, like you found the right place. And I thought, oh my gosh, my people, like I have found them. But I worked by catering. I was like, you know, my grandfather's birthday party and stuff. But I worked as a private chef on and off for many years when I was first starting out working in cookbooks. You know, I've worked on a ton of other cookbooks besides my own. Just as you've had experience working with other people on their books. And when I first started doing that, and I was living in New York City and just requiring a bit more income, I worked a lot as a private chef, which was me working in other people's home kitchens, cooking food for them at home, and being extremely like in tune with what people want to eat at home, what will make them feel most at home in their home, even if someone else is cooking. So even my professional experience in cooking has always been within homes and home kitchens. And I just think they are the cornerstones of our, you know, world, like quite literally.
And that comes across in each of the head notes that you write. And did you say that when you took the course, the instructor said, if you like to make lists? So I love the book has lists.
Yeah, so many.
So many lists. And they're all so wonderful. I'm particularly fond of the list of questions you can ask people to get a dinner table conversation. when it started. Also, the lists of things that you need to have in your pantry. But in one of your wonderful essays, so I think about this book, that it should be given to people who are just starting to cook. It should be given to people who know how to cook and who already love it. They will just love it more. And it should be given to people who don't, who would like somebody else to cook for them, but are just interested in life. You're a very wise person. There are so many, good essays, but in writing about working in, as a professional chef and what you learned by cooking in other people's homes, you wrote, and this made me think of Julia Child again, you wrote, "Disclaimers don't taste good." I loved it. Just say, if you've made a mistake, if something hasn't come out the way you want it to, just say, "Dinner's ready. You made someone a meal. That's a gift." And the idea of food as gift and food as a gift is something that you give to someone you love or to bring people together, and one day we will be together again. It runs throughout the book. You also in that chapter say, "Don't underestimate the value of a homey dessert."
Mm-hmm. That was written for you.
I'll take it.
I think that I can only imagine how much we agree about all of this. And
I mean, we probably should get a third person in here who doesn't agree with us at all. Because right.
But I think that food, cooking at home, which we're, you know, kind of is the center of, I think, both of our work, cooking at home has been the center of my life forever. It's given me so much. And of the many things it's given me, in addition to learning about people from all over the world, in addition to getting to talk with people like you and have you as part of my like community, in addition to teaching me about math and science at a young age and fractions, you know, the one big thing it's given me is a way to give to others, which gives me a tremendous amount of satisfaction.
So we'll get to the recipes because they're really delicious, but this, and one second. These are Julia's cookies. They're now mine.
I have to take a picture. Can I take a picture of this moment? I have to send this to my friends. You can explain. I'll let you explain.
Well, these are the Card Night ginger cookies. And I forgot I'd have to chew and swallow and talk at the same time. Sorry. I might do it again. They're so good. So we'll talk about the recipes. But there's so much more in this book. I feel that you've treated us as friends and family in terms of what you've shared with us, how you've helped us understand what's important to you and how it touches us. And you talk about when you said you feel like when you give a gift, it makes you happy. It's not going out and buying something and making sure that the ribbon is just so. It's these cookies. Mm-hmm. You also talk about volunteering and how much that has meant to you. Would you tell us about Georgine?
Oh, I would love to tell you about Georgine. I'll take my time so you can have as many as you want. I'll tell everyone quickly too, just what you're eating, which are the Card Night ginger cookies, as you mentioned, but that probably doesn't make that much sense to everyone. And so what that means to me, my three closest friends, it's four of us all together. I think of this group of friends as my Card Night friends. We've been friends for so long, and we used to all live in New York City, and we would go make dinner at each other's apartments, and then we would play cards. So Card Night. That's evolved. We now live across the world. We're not playing cards. We get together now on Zoom. But we still keep all that glue between us. And one of the ways we do that is by talking about food all the time. We all love to cook. We all love to bake. one of my dearest friends within that group, Amelia, once made these ginger cookies that like we all couldn't get enough of. So these are a version of those. So these are the card night cookies. So yes, they come with a story, which to me is just the best part of any cookbook and the best part of food in general. Like everything we eat, there's a story behind it. So one of the, I guess, my favorite stories to tell is about our friend Georgine, who this book is dedicated, or it's in her memory. She passed away a little over a year ago, and both her and our late, but, you know, dearly departed cat, Turk, and who lived to be so old. And she, Georgine, loved animals, and we like to imagine them together wherever they are. And so Georgine was our friend who we met through our volunteering shift. And when I'm saying we, I'm talking about me and my wife. And when we moved here, so I'm sitting in my home kitchen. This is, you know, what you see here. It's all from my kitchen. And when we moved here from the city, so we're a couple hours outside of New York City, we're not terribly far from Oblong. And we started volunteering at this place called Angel Food East, which is essentially like a very local version of Meals on Wheels. We serve, it used to be 60, we're now serving 70 clients, and we go make a homemade meal from start to finish. We pack it up in these like individual containers, we seal them. This other group of volunteers comes to deliver the food, and there's a couple shifts of cooks every week. So every client gets, you know, a bag with a few homemade meals, always like a soup, usually baked goods. And it's just this really wonderful thing. It's in the kitchen of a church that we don't belong to, but Georgine belonged to this church, and she volunteered at Angel Food East for a really long time. So when we showed up on our first day, we happened to walk into her shift, which was pretty much the best timing we could have ever asked for. And we got to volunteer with her every week for the last couple years of her life. And in doing so, we got to see her once a week. And someone else in our shift used to pick her up and drop her off. She no longer drived. And then he, I can't remember if he moved, but anyway, he wasn't part of our shift. So we got nominated to pick her up and drop her off. And Grace and I were like fighting for who got to drive, like who got to be in the front seat with her. Yeah, it was such an exciting day. We were like, Georgine's in our car. Like she was like a North Star for us. She was so funny and so sharp and was very open to hearing other ideas, which I think is admirable at any age, but I think especially 90. And to me, she was just so emblematic of what it looks like to consistently show up for your community and to do it without looking for a pat on the back in any way. And it's just part of what you do. And we also, you know, I think so much about what our friendship with her, what a difference it made in our lives. I think honestly, especially for Grace, they were really, really close. And being with her, with Grace, it allowed me to meet another side of my wife, which was really special. Like Grace and Georgine together were really wonderful, and it was really nice to see. And I think so often about how important that friendship was, and that I don't know that we would have had it had we not walked into that kitchen. Like, I don't know how else we would have met her. And I'm so glad we did. And it reminds me why volunteering, she used to say this, that it kind of goes back to what we're talking about. She would always say, like, you get more than you give. And part of what we got when we were giving was we got this friendship. Right. And when you cook with someone, I mean, you know this better than anyone, when you cook or you bake with someone, it changes the way you can talk with someone, because like your body's occupied and you just kind of chat and catch up. And, you know, we would spend hours with her every week and got to really know her and got to really be friends. And if we just went and sat with her maybe for those couple hours every week, especially at first when we didn't quite know each other, I think if we didn't have that activity, that shared activity of preparing food, I don't know that we would have gotten to know each other as well as we did. And I'm just so grateful. So there's, she was an avid home baker. Her favorite thing to say was baking was her Valium. That's how she referred to baking. And she would, you know, we kind of got the vibe that she maybe liked us a fraction of how much we liked her when she started to give us like some baked goods when we would pick her up. And one of our favorite things she made was this coffee cake. And there's a coffee cake recipe in Simply Julia that's an ode to her. It's not her exact recipe. I don't know if she would like it if she was still alive. I think she would probably prefer hers, but it's in her memory. And you know, I got to write about volunteering in this book. I got to write some essays, as you mentioned. I think that's part of what makes this book a lot more personal than my previous books. Not that they weren't personal. All my work is pretty personal, but I got to reflect on some of the stuff that to me has everything to do with food, has everything to do with comfort, with health. And you know, not all of that fits into a recipe, but I think it's worth putting in the same book. So that's a little bit about Georgine, who we just miss a lot. So
and volunteering and cooking alongside someone, and the comfort of cooking, of making something, working with your hands. I love, so there's the coffee cake for Georgine. And there are other recipes. They're tied to people in your life. They're tied to situations. There's, I don't know if this is going to show, but there's a picture. I love this picture.
I think I know which one you're going to show. I want to see if I'm right.
Take a guess. I don't think so.
Of my grandmother?
Yes. Yes. So you, okay. Is it yeah. visible? Can you see the, I mean, 1920, she's in slacks, she's in pants, she's like Coco Chanel. It's just incredible. And so the recipe is for Grandma Beatrice's bubala. Mm-hmm. And you write that you thought bubala was a Yiddish term of endearment. Well, so did I. Mm-hmm. What you give as a recipe is my mother-in-law's matzo meal pancakes.
Mm. And she didn't call them those.
My mother-in-law did. She never called them bubala. She never called me bubala either. But that's something else. But this picture of grandmother and the matzo meal pancakes, I don't know if my mother-in-law used seltzer. She might have.
I think that may have been, I may have just winged that part. But I'm so glad you pointed to this picture and this recipe, because to me, just like the coffee cake and the pictures of Georgine that are in the book, you know, this recipe and that photograph in particular means so much to me, because these are women who are incredibly important to me, incredibly foundational. I never met my grandmother. That's my mom's mother.
But I did.
You did. Should we reveal some behind the scenes, how small the world is?
No. Continue.
But to me, to put these women in a book, to put their photograph, their image, to put their names, and then to attach a recipe to it. So these stories about them that I share, you can actually take these recipes and they can be part of your story. Like, that is the amazing part of a cookbook, right? Like, we get to share ourselves. But then the best thing is when it just becomes, you know, whoever's coffee cake. Like, they don't need to know it was mine or Georgine's. Like, it becomes yours. And that kind of transition to me is really exciting. And so for the recipe from my grandmother, this was a really sort of amazing moment. I know my mom is watching. I wish she was here with us. I don't know how to make her on the screen, but know that she's here. Like, literally, she's here with us. And so this was her mother, and my grandparents, my mom's parents, my grandmother was a baker's daughter. My grandfather was a flour miller's son. So their relationship is very kismet, very meant to be. And they fled Eastern Europe during the pogroms, and very, very long, complicated story made short, they ended up in Brooklyn, where they ran a bread bakery called Ratchick's on Avenue J. Dory was a customer. We will get into this. And I basically feel so tethered to this side of my family, even though I never got to meet these grandparents. And my mom had two sisters who have both since passed, and I was very, very close to my aunts. There's also a picture of them in the book. Yes. And I feel like I've spent so much of my life interrogating my mother and my aunts and my cousins about our family and about the bakery. And I have just had this desire to know these people who I come from, and who I'm so connected to, and, you know, the whole food connection and everything. So in one of these conversations of me asking a million questions, my mom said, you know, have I ever told you about Bubbala? And I thought it's like this term of endearment, like you call someone like sweetie or something.
Right,
and,
exactly.
And I was like, yeah, I mean, you called me that, like it's sweet. And she was like, no, like the pancakes. And so these were the matzo meal pancakes her mother, my grandmother, would make, which are essentially a matzo ball mixture that you fry in butter. Yeah. And my mom was here in my kitchen where I'm sitting one day. And after she had told me about this, I did some research. I like to put seltzer in my matzo balls. That's why I put it in the pancake recipe, because these matzo balls, anything made with matzo can really veer towards baseball, like dense, heavy, and seltzer is bubbly and the opposite. So it helps. Anyway, I made them. My mom was sitting here at the counter where I'm sitting right now. I handed the plate to my mom and she was like, it tastes just like my mom. So she went right back to this time with this woman who's so important to me, who I never met. And, you know, I'm holding it together, telling you the story, but it's very emotional for me. And I think it's just what power food holds, and it can conjure up memories that aren't even ours. It's like amazing.
That aren't ours, or I think I love what you've just said, and I love that it goes back, but it also goes forward, that we can create memories with the food that we make. And you said, I want to go back and talk about your family and about Ratchix, but when you were talking about the coffee cake, you said, well, it's my coffee cake. It was not really, you know, it could have been Georgine's, but then it's mine and now it's yours. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that you do, and I've done it ever since I started writing cookbooks, is you give people permission to do whatever they want with the recipe. Mm-hmm. Right? You've created the recipe, you've tested it, now sent it out into the world, and now it's yours. Mm-hmm. And now you can, if you don't want cinnamon, you'd rather have nutmeg, that's okay. If you want to make it a loaf cake, even though I made it a layer, that's okay. And you give so many, the title says 110 easy recipes, but I think there are at least 150 in here. Mm-hmm. Because of all the do this, do that's that you do. But you help us make something that will become ours and can become somebody else's memory. So I have a recipe in my new book for babka.
Mm.
Right? So I hadn't made, you would think, but I've never made babka. I hadn't until this, well, 2 years ago.
You were busy making some other things.
I'm trying to do other things, but I think I didn't want to make babka, because it was something that my husband loved so much, and he loved it because that's what he had from Ratchix. That was a weekly treat, was to have babka from your grandparents' bakery. Wow. And I write in my new book that there was always babka in our house. And when I made it, Michael said it reminded him of the babka of his childhood. And I realized that's where my mother bought her babka too. Wow. So it was, we go in circles. Wow. Yeah.
I'm so moved by that.
It's, so we had bread from your grandparents' bakery every day. The rye bread was, my father used to eat it with dessert. Whatever he had for dessert. Michael's walking in because he wants me to.
Yeah, please. Michael's invited.
What?
Oh, there I am.
But there are 150
people. Hi, Michael. It's just me. It's just me.
What?
Her mother's picture that was on the wall, right?
Yes, your mother's picture.
I would wait in line because there was a line right to the left. And you came around, and then you stood in front of the counter. When I started, I was too low. The counter was above my head. And I waited in line, and there was a picture of your mother in the little office. It was like there's the princess. There she was.
I feel like I want to put my mom on FaceTime.
You're welcome. And the schnicken were really good.
That's so sweet. The what was really good?
Schnicken, which is like raisin, Danish nuts, honey-ish on top. Yeah.
Which my Aunt Debbie famously would. So my Aunt Debbie, I don't want to insult anyone, but Aunt Debbie was very fancy and I think often felt working at the bakery may have been beneath her. So she would sit at the counter and she would just pluck the nuts off the top and eat them. Some people had their, let me just put my, I'll bring my, let's see if my mom will pick up. That will be fun. Let's see if we can embarrass her.
Hello.
Hi, Mom. Mom, how do you feel hearing Dory talk about going to the bakery and Michael?
I just love it. Absolutely love it. I mean, you know, I stopped crying.
At the bakery, the smell of the bakery was so, you would just open the door and it would be warm and a little foggy. And you have a marble cake in.
Mm-hmm. A marble cake that is very much an ode to the marble rye bread, marble pound cake, which remain two of my favorite like Jewish baked goods. So I did, I guess, a very, I don't know, contemporary millennial version, which is flavored with some coconut, which I love. But it's, yeah, it's the memory of these layers of things and doughs kind of mixed together and just the memory of, you know, generations of bakers. Someone I just saw asked if we've ever been to Isaac's on Avenue J. So Isaac's is where Ratchick's was. Ratchick's is no longer a bakery, and it's but where it was and the building it's in and the ovens and everything are now a kosher bakery called Isaac's.
I didn't know that. I haven't been back in years.
Cooking doesn't have to be complicated to be good. Better Than Bouillon makes it easy to make any meal even better. Call it a base, call it a paste, call it a flavor enhancer. No matter what you're making, you'll make it better by stirring in a spoonful of one of the many flavors of their extensive product range. Better Than Bouillon is made with real ingredients. Meat, seafood, vegetables, seasonings. There are options that are perfect for vegetarians, vegans, and those who follow an organic or reduced sodium diet. Better Than Bouillon can be found in the soup aisles of major grocery retailers or conveniently can be purchased online. For more information, visit betterthanbouillon.com or click on the link in the show notes.
There's so many things I want to talk to you about. I want to talk to you about writing this book through the pandemic. I want to talk about your very interesting idea of what healthy food is, such a healthy on it. But up until COVID, I lived part-time in Paris and so would shop every day and go to the bakery every day. And it took me forever to realize that that's exactly what my mother did. She didn't have the open air market that I have in Paris. She had Avenue J and she bought her bread every day. She may have shopped groceries for a couple of days, but bread was, there was a fresh loaf of bread every day that having something from the bakery was important and having babka was the treat.
Yeah, it's truly very surreal to just hear this, to know my mom is listening. And it speaks to something that I think about a lot as a daily home cook. Like, you know, food is part of our lives every single day, whether we cook or not. And it's such a wonderful and meaningful part of my day. And I think about people like my grandparents who ran a bakery where people like your mother would buy bread every day.
Every day.
There's not that many places we go every day. There's not many things we do every single day. And to know, you know, I have so many feelings talking about this bakery. I have so many emotions and I wasn't even there, right? and I think about the fact that my story about this, the one I tell myself, centers completely on my family, right? On all the people behind the counter. And then to know there are so many people like yourself who have stories
on the other
side. Yeah. And it is, to me, very much like what we're talking about with cookbooks, where we can have these, you know, stories and these recipes that mean so much to us. And then we share them, they go out into the world, and then it becomes like infinite. And it's extremely powerful. And I guess I don't mean to like turn the tables here to you, but one thing I wonder about for you, because you've been writing cookbooks for so long, you've been writing such good cookbooks for so long with like the most trustworthy recipes. You know, if someone wants a cookie recipe, use Dory's. Like, why would you use a different one? Like, you know, it's going to work. You can use one from my book, but otherwise, go to Dory. And I'm wondering for you, because something that I experience a lot, which I imagine must be what it maybe is like for my mom right now, to hear about what her family's bread, that it was this daily part of your family's bread. You know, something that I experience that I find extremely profound is when people share photos of recipes they cook from my book and share them on social media. And you have done this work for so long that you're very active on social media and you're very fun on social media. And I'm wondering for you you've had the experience of people cooking out of your books pre-social media and now, and just how do you feel when you see like your cookies pop up?
It always touches me.
Yeah.
I got an email last week. It made me feel so old, but never mind. It also made me feel so, so good.
You're also the fastest email responder. Anytime I've emailed you, you're like,
to my computer most of the time. But a woman wrote to say, now, is this really possible? Am I that old? That she had a book of mine that had been her mother's. And she now has a daughter. I'm like 104. She has a daughter who was just married. And so the daughter's mother made the wedding cake from Baking with Julia for her daughter because it was a book she had seen in her mother's house.
That's amazing.
And she sent me pictures and it was beautiful.
That's amazing.
You know, I did do this before social media, and every once in a while I would, you know, be out on book tour or something and I'd get a chance to talk to people. But social media allows us to see just whom?
There's no judgment. You won't be copy edited here.
It's whom we're touching. We are touching them, whom we're touching. But you see where your recipes go, what people do with them, how they share them with their families. And the work itself, the work when I'm just here in my kitchen, and I know you feel this way, the work itself is so satisfying. It's so consuming. You're so focused as you're working on it that when I'm working on a recipe, I think about, as I'm writing it, I think about the home baker or the home cook, you know, writing instructions, thinking, will she be able to understand this? You know, is this going to be clear? Is this? But mostly, I'm not thinking beyond the work that I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And then when I pick my head up and send the work out into the world and see it received, see it taken, when you see a picture of a family enjoying something that started in your kitchen, and now it could be a family anywhere in the world. It's so exciting.
Yeah, it really is. And I don't know. There's people.
It never gets old.
Yeah, there's people in the chat area of this. I don't know what to call it. Who are saying just incredibly kind things to both of us. And I don't know. I feel like having this opportunity to talk to you about what it feels like for us to see people like who are choosing to attend live and hear us talk about cookbooks, like who are choosing on a Thursday night to, you know, take an hour and sit with us when you could be doing any number of things. You know, I know that we are in kind and safe company and in the company of people who appreciate all the things we're talking about, which I guess I just want to say that I'm speaking on your behalf.
I'm allowing you.
If I'm wrong. We appreciate all of you so much. And, you know, I really, really, truly appreciate all the things you said about this book, Dory. I mean, I really like poured my heart into this book, and which is a vulnerable thing to do. I mean, you've put yourself out there in your work, and to know that we have this kind group of people who are excited about our work, like, that is not something I take for granted. And that is why I put as much as I do into my books, because I really value the people who pick them up, and I value the contributions they make to their families, to their communities. If I can be helpful in that, like, that's my goal. So
beautifully said.
Yeah. I feel like I could talk to you for days. All I want to do is bake bread with Michael and like make jam with you to slather on it. And it would just, someone saying to call Netflix. I mean, I would just rather sit with you in your kitchen, Dory. But I know that we're supposed to open it up for more questions, but I just want to say, yes, I could talk to you and talk to you and talk to you. And I hope we've had our dialogue before this, and I just know it will continue. And I appreciate you and all of the, the paths that you have just carved for so many of us. And you really show us what it looks like to do it right. And I just thank you. So thank you, Dory. And I can't believe you're here talking about my book. And
so I brought cookies to the table, but I didn't bring tissues. I think we should open this up for questions. You are ready.
We're ready. I'll stay hidden, but I'll call some out. We had a question from Wiley. Can you guys hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Wiley said, I can't wait to receive my book. I heard something about cornmeal cobbler. Can you elaborate, Julia?
Yes, accurate. I can show you a picture of it. I've got the book. So there's, this is the easiest dessert recipe in a chapter of all pretty easy dessert recipes. So this, you can see that. There's the ice cream. There's the recipe. So it's this recipe is called Any Frozen Fruit and Cornmeal Cobbler, because the filling you make with frozen fruit, and you can use any frozen fruit. It's pretty literal. Dory, I'm curious how you feel about frozen fruit, because I love it in this recipe because it's already peeled and chopped and it tastes really good. And the topping is just like cornmeal, a little sugar, half and half, because I have it in my fridge for my coffee, maybe some butter, I can't remember, flour. Mix it together. It's like making cornbread. You put it on top. It's so good. So that's the recipe. How do you feel about frozen fruit?
So I love frozen fruit because good frozen fruit is picked at its ripest, boom, frozen. Mm-hmm. So it's really, you lose something in the texture, but when you're baking with it, when you're putting it in that cornmeal cake, or if you're putting it in a pound cake, or if you're using it for ice cream, or it's such a, and you have it. You don't have to leave home to get it.
Yeah.
You know, get it, pop it in the freezer. Yeah, I'm a fan.
Okay, it's Dory approved.
That sounds delicious. Now, Jen had a question. How did you deal with the challenges of writing a cookbook during the pandemic?
Well, I can tell you about the experience of making this book, but then, Dory, where are you in your next book?
I'm proofing my pages, so okay. I too finished during...
Okay. So yeah, this would be interesting to me just to compare notes, but I turned in the manuscript for this book that I'm holding, and the manuscript is all the words, right? So it's all the recipes and all the introductions to the recipes, the essays, like all the words in the book. They were all done, ready to go for me in February of 2020. That meant all the recipes were tested and, it was ready. The only thing that was missing were the photographs. And so I handed in the manuscript, and I was planning the photo shoot, which is, as I'm sure you can attest, Dory, one of the more complicated parts of producing a book, because all of a sudden it goes from you and your computer and your stove and your oven to other people that you have to pay, and their time is very expensive, and you want to do it efficiently, and you have to think about things like not using the same napkin in every photo and all of these kinds of things. So I was planning the photo shoot, which was going to involve quite a few people. We were going to shoot it in my house where I've shot my other books. I was going to hire some people to help me in the kitchen. I was hiring a photographer. I was renting her a house to stay in nearby. And that was all supposed to happen like the end of March 2020. Wow. So that just quickly seemed, you know, that wasn't going to happen. That wasn't safe to happen. And it was totally not necessary. And the cookbook can wait. And I was ready to just wait and press pause. And then I remembered I live like 10 minutes away from this woman who I hadn't worked with before, but we kind of knew each other. And this wonderful woman, Melina Hammer, who is so talented, and she is talented photographer, food stylist, and prop stylist, which is like, it's hard to find two of those things in one person, like let alone all three. And so we took a month to shoot it, which is a long time for me. I usually shoot quickly. And it was just the two of us, no other support except for incredibly supportive spouses who did many dishes. And I would prepare everything at home, pack it in containers, and leave it on her doorstep. We were never in the room together.
True.
And I would plan the photos. I would send her a ton of notes. I would sometimes drop off like my grandmother's dish. I wanted something on things that mean a lot to me that no one would ever notice but are important to me. And would put this box on her doorstep. She would receive it. And all day we would text. You want the spoon here? You want the blue napkin? And that's how we did it. So other than that, the process has been pretty similar for me. You know, editing is something you can do. You know, you get sent a digital file. Sometimes you print out pages. Everything else has gone to plan. And I honestly, so this is the first like event I'm getting to do for the book tour. The other thing that's different is not traveling, but you know, I wish so much I could be sitting next to you in person, Dory, but I'm so grateful to do this safely. And I really actually am so thrilled to be in my kitchen as I'm talking about this. And it also means so many more people can come because
from all over
because book tours, you know, favor big cities because why would a publisher pay for you to travel somewhere if not a lot of people are there? I get that, but I also think like people cook everywhere. and I feel like especially like in places like New York City, there's so many more interesting things to go to than to like hear me ramble about recipes. Like, so I feel like, but it's just really, I think this makes it much more accessible for so many people and I'm really into it. So that is different for me, but, yeah. How has it been going for you? How did it affect your book?
My timing was very different from yours. I turned in my manuscript. How many days did July have? 31? I turned it in July 31st.
Okay.
Right.
When was it due?
It was due July 31st. I have never been on time.
No.
So it was due. Our son and daughter-in-law moved in with us in March. And Lin Ling was pregnant. And they moved back to New York mid-July. I finished the book July 31st. I sent it to my editor. Gemma, our granddaughter, was born August 6th. So it was this very, right? But all of this was happening during COVID. And so I tested my last recipes with Lin Ling and Joshua going to the supermarket because they wouldn't allow us to go out. Mm-hmm. So there was somebody else shopping for me. Not, you know, I couldn't, like, you know, see the apples and touch them or do. And then I did my entire photo shoot by Zoom.
Wow.
So the team was in New York and I was in Connecticut and attached to them by Zoom for 12 hours.
Wow.
Yeah.
Would you do that again, or was it hard? Or
I would have liked to have been there.
They were
great. The team was fabulous, and they were so. And you find ways to work. You know, mm-hmm. You can't smell it, you can't taste it, but you can. You know, you can see it, you can move it, you can. Mm-hmm. But it was a very different way of working. And my book publishes October 19th.
Wow.
And we're expecting that I won't be traveling.
Yeah.
Even in October, it will be virtual.
So, yeah.
Let me see you again right here, kitchen to kitchen.
I would be.
That's a date.
Thrilled. I will definitely be there. I won't be there. I'll be right here.
I'll be right here.
We would love to have you back. I will be contacting you.
I mean it. I'm not just saying that. I love it. Yeah.
That's so wonderful. Well, before we go to the next question, to your point about reaching people in places other than big cities while you were talking about that. Samantha says, Kentucky girl here, and I'm so grateful. virtual conversation. So isn't it nice that people can join us from everywhere? And we're so grateful that you do. Rebecca has a question. Are there any recipes, Julia, in your book inspired by Lee Bailey?
Oh, did you know Lee Bailey, Dory?
It's so, I was talking about him the other day. I had never met him, but I was talking about a cornbread that was a Bailey recipe.
With like a lot of sour cream in it?
I think so.
Yeah. So I guess for anyone who's not sure who that is, Lee Bailey was a very prolific cookbook author and just very stylish person. I would say he was like the embodiment of sort of a lifestyle brand before that was.
Before we had a term for that, exactly.
Yeah. And I got to be so familiar with his work from a young age because my parents, who I keep talking about, who are here, my parents designed, I think not all, but quite a few of his books. So my parents have worked in publishing for a long time in editorial design and like art departments and all sorts of interesting things, which meant I got exposed to books and magazines at a young age. And I knew that people did work like my parents did, which was make pages, make pages of magazines and books. Yeah. And his books, you know, before Martha Stewart, before Ina Garten, he was making cookbooks that gave you a sense of place. He showed you not just like the picture of the cornbread. That cornbread was, I remember this picture. It's wrapped in a napkin and it's like sitting on the beach, like it's part of a picnic. And to me, those details are things that I love and that I pour into my books. And I look for them in other books. Like I want these details. I love them. I crave them. So to me, he was the model of that. So what was the question? Are there any recipes inspired by him?
Are there any recipes inspired in the book by him?
I don't think there are any specific Lee Bailey inspired recipes, but I would say the whole book itself, all of my solo books that I've done, I think they're all very much inspired by him. I think his books were very much my education and the type of books I wanted to make because I would flip through them as a kid and I wanted so badly to sit at his table. It just seemed like the coolest thing in the world and he had cool friends and I just thought the whole thing was so cool. And I was a kid who often didn't feel that cool and I would read his books and I felt cool and that felt really great.
Yeah, he always was. But here's a question for both of you from Ellen. Let's start with Dory. What comfort food have you eaten the most of during quarantine?
I want to know.
Well, normally my comfort food, you know, I'm like anybody else, carbs, is rice. But during this quarantine, and maybe it was because once a week Joshua cooked and he cooked pasta, but I've had so much pasta recently, so much more than usual. And I haven't had a pasta dish I didn't love. So this is my new comfort food.
Julia? Any particular type of pasta?
Oh, so no, but wait, now that I'm saying that, I also have taken to having oatmeal made with savory broth. So nice. Linling and I would save all the bones from our chickens and stuff, and we would make a chicken broth out of it. And I've now like half a cup of chicken broth, half a cup of water. This is breakfast. Oatmeal, raisins, because I do believe, even though so many people hate them, that everything should have raisins.
I love them. I love them.
Yeah. Okay. And chili crisp.
That sounds great.
Right. So yeah, like just a spoonful of chili crisp. So yeah, that's something I look forward
to. That sounds wonderful. Like sweet and spicy and savory. Yeah. I feel like all I want to do is melt cheese on everything.
I understand.
I don't care what's underneath it. Vegetable,
that right now, and we haven't had a chance to talk to it. We need another time because I want to talk about your talking about coming to understand who you are, the body that you're living in, the foods that you want. I feel like this has been during this pandemic. I'd like to think that everyone has become a more confident and a better cook. because I cook every day, but I feel like I've cooked 3 days a day. it's felt different. We've cooked a lot, but I also have let go of you can't have this or you can't have that. I could trade in the oatmeal for your cookie in the morning, and that's okay. Absolutely. I feel like, the rules have changed, and it's been nice to be kinder.
Yeah, I'm happy to hear that. And I guess I'll just give my elevator pitch of what healthy kind of means to me, because this is a book of healthy comfort food, and is very intentional about using this word healthy. And I mean, basically, long story short, I wrote a book of healthy recipes that has nothing to do with weight loss, has nothing to do with restriction of any kind, has everything to do with pleasure and joy and having a deeply connected relationship to what we eat and what we cook, because that is healthy. And I just feel like that's taken me a really long time to get there, which I talk a lot about in the book. You can buy the book and
learn more.
But I think that this is just a really worthwhile thing to add to this conversation, because I think words like healthy get thrown around a lot to the point where they kind of lose meaning. And I just think it's worth pausing and reflecting on what we mean when we say that. And I think it's a word we can all define for ourselves. And whether it's savory oatmeal or a ginger cookie, if you are, in my eyes and in my book, I mean, literally, if you are eating something that makes you feel good and that you are giving yourself this moment where you're taking care of yourself or taking care of the person next to you, that is healthy, that is comfort, and that is something we all deserve. So that is very much, I think, what I try my best to explore in this book. And I am, I thank you for bringing that up, because it is important to me, and it's just, I think it's important to everyone. Everyone I talk to about it, it resonates, because this is how we feel about ourselves. That's everything, right? That's our lives.
I love being able to equate healthy with pleasure, because you can't be healthy if you're not happy.
Yeah.
So, and there's food, happiness. That was an equal sign.
That equation makes a lot of sense to me too. So.
I think for many of us, there are a couple, we've got time for just a couple more questions.
Sure. Okay.
We've got one here from Emily, who says, in your past books, I've loved all the stories and recipes about you and Grace. Can we expect more in Simply Julia?
I think that this book is as much a love letter to my wife as it is a cookbook. I think there's so much of us in it. And that is for very practical reasons. One is that, as I mentioned, this is a book from my kitchen to yours. And my kitchen is, the one I'm sitting in. This is the kitchen that produces all the food we eat. You know, Grace and I live here. We've both worked from home our entire relationship. We're very used to being with each other all day, every day. Mm-hmm. You know, the pandemic is horrible, and we're all ready for it to be over, and it's impacted everyone, some so many more than others. And for us, our day-to-day life, I think we're two of the kind of rare people that it actually hasn't been that different within the walls of our home. And so this is the place where we eat all of our meals. And because we live in a pretty rural area, that is not new to us. I've cooked at home every day for a long time. And Grace is the person I cook for and I cook with the most often. And, we volunteer at Angel Food together. We do that weekly cooking together. So when I talk about what I cook in my kitchen and what is my just day-to-day cooking, which is what I talk about in this book, Grace is in all the stories. I'm a little bit of a broken record. But also, as we were talking about at the very beginning, which was just a really nice thing to reflect on, in terms of food being this gift that we can give both ourselves and other people. Grace is my favorite person. So I feel like food is a way I get to express how I feel, and also just how I can express my consideration. I don't know if she mentions like, whoa, it's been a while since we had this or that, I can like file that away and like pull it out a few days later, you know, like, hey, you mentioned this thing. Usually she's not, I'm so much more sentimental than she is. So usually she's like, okay, but no, but it's sweet. And yeah, so she comes up a lot. There's some cute pictures of her with our dogs.
Adorable pictures.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. Well, our last question this evening, and again, is a question for both of you. When you're writing a cookbook, how many recipes do you actually have to compile, and how many do you edit out? What's that process? Dory, should we start with you?
Oh, nobody's ever asked me that question before. I work in a somewhat haphazard manner. I kind of don't know what my book is going to be until I realize the deadline is looming, because I'm always creating. I'm thinking I have another idea. I'm inspired by something. I make another recipe. And I don't really know that I have a book until I have a book. So I do my work in notebooks, pencil and paper. And when everything is together and I've put it into the computer and I've sent it off to my recipe tester to be tested, I then write the names of the recipes down on cards, and I kind of deal them out like I'm playing cards. Like, oh, is this in the breakfast chapter, or should it be in simple cakes? And sometimes then I'll look at it and think, oh, how is it that I have 50 cookies and only one muffin? You know, so I'll kind of see what's happening. I very rarely, it's very hard for me to give up a recipe. I'm more likely to add than to subtract. But it's books like Julia's work. A lot of the recipes that I put in books come from someplace. They come from a memory. They come from a visit. They come from, you know, travel. They come from, they're given to me as a gift. It's a great gift to give somebody a recipe. And so I'm never really sure what I'm going to have. Do you work from an outline? Do you know?
This is so interesting to me. And I'm surprised I've never asked you about this before, because I really do think if you ask, you know, 10 cookbook authors, you'll get 10 different answers. Like, there's not a formula for how we create the work we create, even though the final product is similar, right? Like, right. Recipes, photos, right. Index, it's done. and my process is like totally the opposite. I start everything on the page, and I start everything with an outline, and I come up with the entire table of contents. And I
would love to do that.
You're expressing is amazing to me, because I'm hearing you and I'm like, oh, Dory's an artist. Dory is constantly creating. And then when it's time to, you know, do your show at the gallery, it's like, okay, what order should it go in? Like, that's what it sounds like to me. And I'm the opposite. And I feel like I basically draw the blueprints for the house before I build it. Like, I need to see the whole thing and see how everything fits into place. And that means I don't leave a lot on the kind of cutting room floor. Sometimes, you know, my final books are pretty close to my book proposals, to my plans, basically, but they're not identical. Like, I changed some things along the way, but I need to see the whole thing and how it fits. I need to know what, like, the title and subtitle are. Like, I need the whole thing. So
I want to be just like you, either when I grow up or in my life. Just, it's at the very, very end that I make that list and that I see the table of contents.
Well, I think it's amazing that you know that you'll get there, because you've done it so many times. Like, I don't.
Oh, sometimes I don't. So sometimes I have to tell myself, you've done it before, you'll do it again. It'll be okay.
Yeah.
I tell myself that a lot.
I have that post-it too.
Well, I know I said that was the last question. I lied, because somebody asked a really good one that I would love to end on this evening. By the way, that last question was from Steve. So really, this is the last question from Samantha, and it's a great one. if you could host, this is for both of you, if you could host a dinner with four other cookbook authors to cook together and share a meal, who would they be?
Do you want to go first?
No.
Do they have to be alive?
I don't think so. Yeah, I think it's not anybody. Yeah.
I think I could be ready.
Go.
Okay, go.
Do we count as two or four in addition to the two of us?
Can we have a joint table?
Okay. I want to be sitting at a round table so I can see everyone. And I would love, Dory, for you to be sitting at that table. I would love Lee Bailey to be sitting at that table. We're just talking about
him. I would love to meet him.
I would be honored if Edna Lewis sat at that table. And one more or two more, because I counted you and maybe I get one extra. Two more. I would love this counts. She wrote a cookbook. Dr. Maya Angelou wrote a cookbook, The Hallelujah Table. And I just think she's invited.
Yeah.
And I would like for Dr. Jessica Harris to sit there too, to sort of connect the dots between a lot of us.
Oh, I just want to sit there and listen or just be in the kitchen cooking, which you write about being able to just. This is so hard. So I would want the people who taught me to cook to be there because I never met them. Mm. So I learned from Maida Heater. I never met her.
Wow. I'm surprised to hear that.
I never met her. Wow. I stood at the top of her head when she was honored by the James Beard Foundation. I was sitting way, way back and she had bright white hair and the kind of just shone off the top of her head. So I knew she was there, but no, never.
Wow.
Met. Yeah. So, I still channel her when I'm working on recipes. I learned to bake by reading Maida Heater and Gaston Lenôtre, French pastry chef. I saw him. What is it with distance? He was under the Eiffel Tower. I was like the river, but it was a party. I'd like to meet him. The third cookbook that I owned and cooked my way through was Craig Claiborne's New York Times cookbook. So those were teachers.
Yeah.
And then I have you.
I would be thrilled and I'd be happy to do the dishes and it would just be great. I love that question. That's a really fun.
That's okay. But we would all, actually, I said I would be in the kitchen, but in fact, we would all be in the kitchen.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Oh.
Dream.
That's a great question to end on. Yeah. I feel that pop-up. We have to ask that question. Well, Julia, Dory, this was absolutely wonderful.
It was. I love this.
Thank you so much. We had such fun with you. Thank you all for coming. Simply Julia, 110 easy recipes for comfort food. You have to order your signed copy. You can order it at oblongbooks.com.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you enjoyed it, please take a moment to rate and review the show. And once again, thank you to Better Than Bouillon, which consistently enhances my food, and this special season of Keep Calm and Cook On. One spoonful easily adds the perfect amount of flavor to any of your meals. For more information and to shop, head to betterthanbouillon.com or just click on the link in the show notes. Until next time, take care.